All right, we are back. Ready Radio, KLZ 560. And we've got Aris Papadopoulos with us now, founder of Resilience Action Fund. Aris, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, John. I'm doing very well. Appreciate the invitation.
No, appreciate you joining us very much. I know we had a little error on our dialing up of things, so we're glad we got you and appreciate it very much. And, you know, you're an expert in this area, and I'll be honest, I'm learning more as we go. I've got some familiarity with this just from, you know, being an outdoorsman and being, you know, brought up in a way to be prepared for certain things that would come along, but I am nowhere near an expert. Yes, I'm a radio host of a show called Ready Radio where we talk about this, but I'm learning as we go, just like a lot of my listeners are as well. That's why I bring experts on like you on a regular basis to help the rest of us understand what's going on. And I want to make sure I preface this, Aris, because, you know, I don't consider us a quote-unquote prepper show. I consider us a show to handle the what-ifs of life, and that could be everything from, yes, a global disaster or a simple bike crash, a car accident, you fall down on the ice. I mean, there's all sorts of things that come along to prevent, you know, or that create a crisis, and I want to give people a way to prevent those and or handle them when they come.
You're right on, John. I call it, you know, being better consumers. So we know what to prioritize, how to plan our choices, and how to make the best choices.
There you go. And so, again, you pretty much now know, you know, who I am, what we're doing. Give us some tips, though. I know that even though it is hurricane season, we haven't had a lot of them. But here in Colorado, we don't get hurricanes, but we can and have had, you know, floods and things along those lines. So let's start there on the hurricane/flood protection.
Well, you know, anything east of the Rockies is in a tornado-prone part of the U.S.
So, yes.
You know, I don't distinguish, you know, the alley, tornado alley. And tornadoes can happen almost anywhere. And unfortunately, our codes really aren't meant to preserve our houses. They're really kind of designed to get us time to escape,
okay,
not to preserve the most important purchase we have.
Okay.
So, you know, I like to start with the roof. You know, the roof is probably the most important part of the home in a wind situation. And most of the roofs today will not withstand an EF1, let's say tornado.
Right.
If you want to go to an EF2, when you change or upgrade your roof, try to get it rated at least for 135 miles an hour. And an organization called Fortify, they've developed a very detailed standard for that. And you can reference their standard, Fortified Roof, and they're very active in the southern part of the U.S., but it really applies to the whole,
sure,
you know, U.S. So, you know, going for at least 135 to me is a minimum. And while you're doing that, you might get a fire A-rated roof at the same time.
Good idea.
You know, to give you even more protection.
Yep.
So even if the code doesn't require it, I strongly advise consumers, you know, this is the most important purchase of your life. It's where you have your possessions, your memories, you know, your family.
Mm-hmm.
Go above the minimum, you know, to protect yourself.
I think what you just said there, too, is really important. We all have this perception that, you know, codes exist to keep us safe. And to a large extent, Aris, they do. I'm not knocking anybody that is in that world or writes codes or even checks them. That's not my point. My point is, we sometimes put false hope in codes, thinking that they have gone through and thought of everything ahead of time so that we wouldn't have to. And the reality is, you know, they're probably trying to watch out for as many people as they can, to your point, under a certain level. But once things get to a certain point, those codes no longer apply.
Yeah, codes are like minimum wage.
Right.
They even say themselves in their fine print, this is the minimum. Well, what part of our life, John, do we go to the minimum? Is it nutrition? Is it transportation? Is it education? You know, healthcare?
Yeah.
So why should we be at the minimum in the most important choice and the most important asset of our lives, which is our homes?
You know what? You bring up a great point, and I've experienced that on many, many things around the home where, you know, code says X, but can we not upgrade that and do that better than what code says? And the answer is typically a resounding yes, we can. It's a matter of, do you want to spend that extra money and time to do so?
Exactly. And today we really put so many things in our homes. I mean, a lot of us work from home, so our homes are packed with so many things that we purchased. But if that shell, if that roof, if those walls aren't strong enough, everything will be lost. So So there's a lot at stake. You know, the packaging is very important, more important than it ever was. So why not invest more in the packaging, even if we have to kind of prioritize for later some of the things that we'll put on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. This also, and not, you know, I was going to say not so much that it applies to us in Colorado, although, as you know, Aris, we can get some really, really strong wind storms here, especially along the west side of Denver. You know, we can get above 100 mile an hour, even 110. Granted, we don't have the humidity, so it's not quite, you know, our 110 mile an hour wind would be like an 80, 90 mile an hour wind in humidity. So it's not quite the same because the air movement's not the same. But we can get into some pretty high winds blowing, you know, buildings down, blowing roofs off and so on. And one of the things that you mentioned as well are our shutters on windows to keep things, you know, keep those things that are flying through the air from coming through a window. Because I also know, and you do as well, that once that home becomes a quote-unquote vacuum, I guess you could say, that air differential is what really causes more damage than anything else. If we can keep the windows shut and tight, we're much better off.
Exactly. And today we have things like fabric shutters that are really super strong ballistic nylon, similar to the airbags that I've put on a couple of my doors and windows, and they're so easy to put on and take off, unlike, you know, the wooden plywood or the aluminum shutters that, you know, a lot of people typically use.
Is that something that, Aris, they make on a per-window basis? Do people have to make that themselves? That's something, by the way, I'm learning. I've never heard of that. So how does that actually work?
Yeah, either way, you know, you can pre-order certain dimensions, and you can order online, or a lot of the big box stores have these products. Or you could have someone, you know, come and do the whole, cutting and installation for you. So it depends how, you know, handy you are around the house. But either way, I had somebody come and do it for me and show me, you know, how to remove it and put it back on. It wasn't that expensive.
Okay.
But I really thought it's a great innovation.
And, agreed.
You know, as you get older, you don't want to be, you know, lifting heavy objects, you know, in a rush.
Agree. Again, we're talking to Aris Papadopoulos. And Aris, real quick, founder of Resilience Action Fund. Before I forget and we run out of time here, how do folks find you? What's a website they can find you at?
It's buildingresilient.com. Buildingresilient.com. And there's plenty of resources in there. There's a nice quiz on resilience. There's a guide called the Buyer's Guide to Resilient Homes, which to me is a must aid for anybody looking to relocate, to build or buy a new house. It's like having a friend, an expert friend next to you.
Okay, perfect. And by the way, thank you very much, and appreciate you joining us again today. Let's move into flooding. I mean, that's another thing where, especially this time of the year, in fact, one of the largest floods that we had in our area happened back in the 2013 year up in the Boulder County, you know, area up above the foothills. Several lives were lost. Homes were lost. I mean, it was a big deal. So we can't have those. And, you know, we tend to think in Colorado that we're sort of immune from those things. And yet, Aris, we definitely have flooding in Colorado. Maybe not like what you would get from a hurricane. Ours are different. It's fast and furious typically. And then, then as it flows east, it does some of those things that, you know, a hurricane-type flooding would do. But immediately when it's coming out of the mountains, of course, as you can imagine, you know, little creeks become big, huge rivers that literally swallow everything up in its path.
Yeah, exactly. And those are so sudden. You know, I use a rule of thumb. I like to say that anything below 15 feet from a creek in terms of elevation or from the bottom of, you know, a valley or a vale can be very dangerous location. So, you know, I tell people, please don't build there. Or if you're building there, make sure it's elevated above that level.
Okay.
So, you know, to me, that's kind of a rule of thumb, you know, when I'm looking at different locations. But there's a great resource now called Flood Factor, and that's available online. It's a nonprofit group, floodfactor.com, that has given a flood rating for almost every home, every property in the U.S., and I found it very reliable.
I just went to it, and thank you. Again, another resource I did not know about. Thank you for that very much.
Yeah. And not only does it tell you, you know, the rating, but it also gives you some suggestions on what things you should be looking to do.
Okay.
You know, dry proofing, wet proofing, you know, probably the least expensive, or changing some of the materials kind of on the ground floor, the lower walls, et cetera, elevating certain equipment, appliances, so they don't get damaged.
Right. The other thing that in my business, because I'm also a business owner outside of what I do here, and we do a lot of smaller excavating, drainage work, things like that, not just necessarily landscaping, but making sure that some of what you said earlier, that A, the water just doesn't get into areas it doesn't need to in the first place. And you wouldn't be surprised. You would know this full well. How many people don't look at things and a home gets built and somebody comes through, a landscaper or whatever, and they change all sorts of different things, and they even change from the original design plan of what was supposed to be there for drainage, and they wonder why when there's a big rainstorm or flooding, things really get bad for them. And it's almost like, I don't want to sound rude, but you brought this on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's our choices, and sometimes we don't realize we made those choices.
And some of this, again, Ayers, I'm not trying to sound, egotistical or insensitive, but most of it is common sense. Some of what you said a moment ago makes total sense. I mean, water runs downhill. It doesn't run uphill unless it's forced to. I mean, it just typically, naturally, because of gravity, runs downhill. And to your point, if you're within a certain distance of known water streams and things that you think are dry all the time but could very easily become wet with runoff, those are the things to really pay close attention to that I don't think, Ayers, most people do.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, our ancestors were pretty much more sensitive to this fact because they saw the nature's forces. They saw the raw terrain. We've kind of become not as visible to us as we urbanized. When we lost contact with the terrain, with nature, with the risks.
We did.
So, we don't appreciate those things, but we need to get that back.
No, I agree. In fact, I have an auto show that I do on Saturdays, and I've given people pointers over the years about, what type of water would you even drive through, because I've seen many a vehicle engine and all sorts of other things on a vehicle damaged from driving through, too much water, because people think that, hey, I'll just go ahead and drive through this. They don't realize that most unibody cars today become a boat with just a certain amount of water underneath them. I don't care how much the vehicle weighs. If there's air inside of it, which there is, that vehicle will float. And again, to your point, most people, because of, I guess, just lack of knowledge or not seeing it like we once did, Ayers, in some cases, they think their home and their vehicles are indestructible, and they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost like we're living in a virtual reality,
Yeah.
Unvirtual reality.
You've got in your notes, too, which I think is big, and this is one thing that we've touched on here briefly in the past, but that is, make a plan. If you are in I don't even think it matters, Ayers, whether you're in a high-risk area or not, but if you're in an area where there could be things that change. Maybe fire, gets in the way and blocks a route. Maybe water, a stream overflows, and that's going to block a route out. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is you need to know some of those things and have a backup plan for whatever it's going to be for you to escape that situation.
Exactly. And the first most important level of plan is you and your family. The second level are things that you're going to need once you escape. And the third level is what you could do in advance to have something to come back to.
Mm. Good point. When it comes to, and I've talked about this one in the past, and that is, what do you take with you? And we've been through that, over and over again, actually even the past several weeks, so I won't get into a lot of that. I have told people, too, that, the document thing, a lot of folks think, man, I got to grab all these papers. Well, if you do a little bit of forethought on the front side, Ayers, and we now have cloud services, and if somebody doesn't have them, they're probably living on a different planet, because the reality here, there are so many free cloud-based services where you can, for free or nominal charge, take everything you have that is documented, and either you scan it or you can have somebody scan it for you. But the reality is, Ayers, we live in a day and age where you should not have to run around your house looking for documents.
Exactly. Yeah, totally correct, yes.
My point is there's enough there to enough other alternatives there to handle things. All right, property loss. This is another thing. And I also talk to people all the time about, you know, insurance and, you know, being properly insured and making sure you've got things handled. And by the way, most insurance companies, those of you listening, typically, and the ones that we deal with, you know, Paul Leuenberger, my agent here from American National, they will help heiress in a lot of cases. Even if you ask them, hey, I want you to come out and analyze. Maybe you live in the foothills and you've got some trees and things around you. Your own insurance company, heiress, will help you through what you need to do to minimize risk. Because they want to anyways.
Exactly. And they'll help educate you. And even though today a lot of the insurance is done kind of, you know, electronically, you know, I'm glad to hear that in certain areas, you know, real people go out and, you know, inspect the location and help the homeowners.
You also have in here, and this is something that, you know, all of us in Colorado, I think now, I mean, we had huge wildfire last fall, kind of into the winter months here in Colorado, and it wasn't in the mountains. It was really just kind of on our western suburbs up north, actually where I grew up. It's an area that I grew up in my whole life, Eris. And I think what people have realized in Colorado is this fire risk is not just a mountain thing. You have to be aware of this. We have lots and lots of open space here in the you know, Colorado Front Range area. And I think people have finally realized that, wait a minute, time out. I need to double check where, you know, if in fact I'm moving or even where I'm at right now, I need to look at what that risk factor is before I make a final decision.
Exactly. Even low brush can catch fire. And we've built so densely with combustible materials.
Yes.
That once a few houses start burning, quickly the rest of the development can catch on fire.
I also know, and this is something that I don't know all of the ins and outs of, and maybe you do, but I also know that there are, you know, fire suppressant systems, and it's not all just water. There's even chemical systems and so on. You know, is that worth, I mean, if you're somebody that lives maybe in a higher, you know, fire area, you know, even though your house is insured, you know, which I, by the way, don't look at that as the defining factor as to what I'm going to do to prevent fire. Just because it's insured doesn't really mean anything. I had a house burned to the ground in the Granby fire a couple of years ago. So just because you're insured doesn't mean things aren't going to happen to you, Eris. But the question I guess I have is, are some of those devices that folks can look at, are they worthwhile, or is the expense such that it's just not worth messing with?
Again, it depends on the value of the property. You know, if you're asking me, you know, should I do it for a $300,000 property, I'd probably say it's probably not worth it. Should I do it for $1 million property, it starts becoming, attractive. So, you know, the value of what you're trying to protect is a function here, because a lot of these systems have, initial fixed costs, you know, the installation and the basic heart of the system. And then they have to also be maintained to be functional.
Correct. And what I also know is that the majority of the items that we're talking about, unfortunately, are out-of-pocket expenses. It's not like you're even getting a huge discount on your homeowners to buy those items. You know, the homeowners that have those have typically just spent money out of pocket to really kind of insure themselves, if you would.
Correct, yeah. But there are lower-cost things that people can do. For example, I like to talk about siding. You know, the siding in the roof, again, you know, two important things. If you're replacing the roof, the incremental cost to go to an A-rated, fire-rated roof is small. So you should do that. If you're doing the siding of the house, why not go to something that's non-combustible, like a fiber cement board?
Right. Yeah, as I say, a concrete board. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Board. So, you know, when you're doing these things, the incremental cost, that's when you should step up, you know,
right,
a little bit.
Well, and the other thing that I know, just from being, again, on the property maintenance landscaping side, the mistake I see a lot of folks make, and it happens, people go in and they put landscaping in when the house is new, and when that tree is a, you know, 2-inch caliper tree and it's not a big deal and it's a long way away from the house, over time, 10, 15 years, that tree grows and grows and grows, and pretty soon it's like growing against the house, which, as you know, Eris, that just becomes a fire hazard in and of itself. People don't realize that if things are hot enough, a fully mature, fully watered tree that has no issues can burn up in a moment's notice if it gets hot enough.
Exactly, yes. The big trees have to be kept a good distance. I like to say at least 20 yards.
Yeah, and I will tell you, here in Colorado, with our land shortage that we have, and the way they're, to your point earlier, the reason why we lost so many homes in the fire we had last fall is literally, and I'm not exaggerating, Eris, some of these homes, $1 million plus homes, literally you and I could stand arm in arm together and touch each house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting a tree in some cases that far away, there would be no trees in the yards of some of these homes because you couldn't do it.
Right, yeah.
So, in turn, people plant and they put them right up against the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a disaster waiting to happen, unfortunately, as we saw.
No, it really is. In fact, that was some of the things that we saw, even, you know, the video that we were watching, you know, not quite a year ago here in Colorado. I got about 5 minutes or so left. Things you want to close with. I mean, just thoughts that people typically don't think about when it comes to just preventing the, you know, these sorts of things that come along, and or when they do, what should folks be thinking about?
Well, I like to say, you know, when you're thinking about renovating, and a lot of people, you know, during this the last 3-4 years,
right,
have been putting more money into their house, you know, how you prioritize your kind of, you know, wish list is important in terms of the strength of your house. Yes, we like the fancy kitchen and the bathroom and those things, but if your house, you know, has certain weaknesses in terms of its fire resistance or its water, you know, resistance or wind, I'd prioritize those things first. And now we've got these green incentives, you know, which are great, and I love to see people, you know, putting solar panels and doing other things. But if they haven't already strengthened their house,
true,
you know, I worry that everything's going to be lost, you
true
know, the green investment and the house. So, you know, I like to tell people, you know, let's make resilience the first priority, and then we can be comfortable and safe to add everything else that we enjoy having.
Good words of wisdom. Aris, I appreciate it. Again, we'll have you back. I appreciate you joining us. Founder of Resilience Action Fund, buildingresilient.com is the website. We'll have that up on our website a little later as well. Aris, I appreciate it. I know we had a little bit of a delay getting you on, but it's been a joy having you, and I appreciate it very much, sir.
Thank you, John. Look forward to
you.
Talking
bet. Have a great weekend.